This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Jill Mongaliman, lead organizer, and Yanyanjo Mukungu, steering committee member for the Young Workers in the Green Economy Project, for Got Green, a grassroots organizing group led by people of color and based in Southeast Seattle, that promotes the movement for an equitable green economy as the best way to fight poverty and global warming at the same time. Got Green works to ensure that the benefits of the green movement and green economy, green jobs, access to healthy food, energy efficient and healthy homes, and public transit, reach low-income communities of color. Jill Mongaliman
and Nanyanjo Mukungu
are here today to tell us about the work of Got Green and to discuss the Young Workers in the Green Economy Project, along with their new report, Environmental Justice, Jobs, and Education, Seattle's Young Adults Speak Out, published in November 2013. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hi. Would you begin by saying a few words about Got Green and your overall mission?
So Got Green, we started in 2008, and the vision was originally to introduce the green economy to communities of color and low-income communities as a pathway out of poverty. What we found was that we really needed to position ourselves and have a place where we can rise up our voices and have a place at the table as far as like being in the green movement. So we've really focused on community organizing and leadership development hand in hand with trying to affect policy in our city.
Before we focus on the Young Workers in the Green Economy Project, would you give a brief overview of Got Green's programs?
Right. So first we have the South Seattle Jobs Committee, which is focused on basically creating local job opportunities for disadvantaged communities, particularly in South Seattle. We did 700 door knocks back in 2011, and people were really saying that they were hurting from unemployment and the recession. So we wanted to create this grassroots committee of leaders who were experiencing that to advocate for local jobs in the South Side. And what's resulted from that is a targeted local hire campaign. The city of Seattle has passed a resolution that they would implement a stakeholder process to create a citywide policy to ensure that city projects would hire a certain percentage of people from the community, from disadvantaged communities who have been hurting economically. Rainier Valley has doubled the unemployment compared to the rest of the city, and at the same time seeing a lot of development in their neighborhood. So it's about time, you know, that the community starts benefiting from these projects. And through our advocacy and our mobilization and coalition building, we've made, you know, jobs in the South Side a very important priority for the City Council and the Mayor's Office. The other program that came out of the Women in Green Project, we started up a women-led team focused on food access and more specifically how to put healthy food dollars into the hands of low-income families. A lot of the families, you know, have to choose between do I pay my rent or do I buy healthy food? And expressed in our survey, when we surveyed women, that they wanted to feed their family healthy food but just couldn't afford it. So a lot of the women's team has focused on how do we increase dollars at farmers markets where the food is locally grown and guaranteed organic and also is an outlet for families on EBT, on SNAP, and so have advocated for the farmers market nutrition program to be saved when it was at the brink of being cut, the state legislature. And then recently, and through its pilot, the Fresh Bucks program through the city of Seattle to be expanded and fully funded. Right now, the city has renewed funding, has included into their 2014 budget, and we'll have it voted on, I guess, the adoptions next week. And we'll see how, you know, how much further this program can go. It's very widely used, and it's a way that families can maximize their grocery shopping at farmers markets. It's a match, $10 match program for EBT users at farmers markets. So there's no criteria besides being low income. So it covers a lot of gaps for people in the city who are low income but don't qualify for other food programs. We're really excited. Those two programs have been really just working all year long. And then there's the Young Workers Project that's been working alongside it too. And Nan can tell you a bit more about that.
Let's focus now on the Young Workers in the Green Economy Project. What led to the project being started?
I guess there's a number of different reasons why the project was started. I sort of participated a little bit later into the project, but I think the emphasis was that there's an assumption that young people of color don't really care about the environment, and that is something that's simply not true. There's just a number of different barriers to acting out these sort of like certain ways of being environmentally friendly. So the Young Workers Project was just highlighting that intersection of environmental like justice and poverty. And so the project began with, I guess, 146 surveys to young people of color, mostly in South Seattle. And it led to two community roundtables and then a report back, and then the event that we had, I think it was last week now. And so there was a number of different questions that were asked, and the result of those surveys were that the reasons that young people of color have a lack of access to jobs, especially green jobs, were barriers to transportation or accessing like reliable transportation, also financial support for education and gaining the work experience necessary. So those were like the three main barriers that resulted from the surveys. And there were also like testimonials, one of which I participated in, that just reflected that even though a lot of the young people feel like they're alone in this struggle to like accessing jobs, we all had similar barriers and similar things that resulted from the surveys.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Jill Mangalaiman, lead organizer, and Yanyanjo Mukungu, Young Workers in the Green Economy steering committee member for Got Green, a grassroots organizing group led by people of color and based in Southeast Seattle that works to ensure that the benefits of the green movement and green economy reach low-income communities of color. Our topic is the Young Workers in the Green Economy Project and their new report, Environmental Justice, Jobs, and Education, Seattle's Young Adults Speak Out. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Nyanjo, would you like to say a bit more about yourself and what led you to become involved in the project?
So I guess I became involved through participating in Got Green's Target Local Hire petitions at City Council. So one of my friends is an organizer in Got Green, and I saw a lot of the work that they were doing. At the time, I was doing AmeriCorps, and my job didn't really have a lot of organizing aspects to it, so just, like, to be able to participate in that was really exciting. So I, like, went to one of the City Hall petition for the Target Local Hire, and that felt really good to be able to be a part of that, mm-hmm. just to really feel like I was moving to take action to address, like, systemic reasonings for people of color. And later, I went to one of the community roundtables. A lot of the things that were said in the survey and the questions that were asked really related to my experience. And it just felt really good to know I wasn't the only one and to feel like people were asking me questions that really reflected the questions I was asking myself. And it really, really struck me as something I wanted to continue working on because as like a low-income woman of color who has a college degree but doesn't necessarily have the family or financial support to be able to have access to work experience or sort of connections because my parents are immigrants from Uganda. We don't necessarily have a lot of connections here. So a lot of the barriers are things that I experience like day to day to like getting jobs. Just being able to see that with other people was something that led to my continuous participation in the Young Workers Project.
Focusing again on your report, would you go into more detail about the people that you interviewed for the report, what their backgrounds were like?
So the focus was on South and Central Seattle, and the age group that we targeted was between 18 to 35. We wanted to include the reentry age group of folks who may be coming out of the criminal punishment system, and also acknowledging, you know, people spend a lot of time in school as well. But the majority of the folks we did talk to were in their 20s, and we were very, you know, focused on trying to speak to a lot of folks of color. And I believe a third of the participants were from immigrant family households, and so had identified that more than one language was spoken in their home. So they were either immigrant themselves or their parents were. And so that was also another, I guess, issue that came up when one of our steering committee members had mentioned that, you know, the struggle about lack of access, financial aid, and experience also comes with networks and the ability to have the knowledge of, like, the process to apply for financial aid was a struggle for immigrant families. So identifying that as a kind of a secondary barrier. So we had interviewed 146 on the street. We met them at bus stops, events, community kitchens. I don't know, there was an assortment of strategies to meet folks. We did the surveying in a span of 2-3 months with majority volunteers. And we have a coordinator, main organizer, Mo Avery, who was leading the coordination of the survey, took a lot of surveys herself. And these surveys were anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes. Some of them were multiple choice questions, and others were open-ended so that people can give more detail to their story and about their barriers that they were experiencing.
You've alluded to this a bit earlier, but in terms of the response that you got, what was the top priority for the young people that you interviewed?
Well, there was a lot of different priorities, but I think one of the main ones was access to financial support for obtaining higher education. I know one of the people in the testimonials spoke about there's just a lot of different ways you can, like, visualize these barriers to accessing. It's just like being able to understand the financial aid packages, like being able to understand that. I know for me, that was something I had to learn myself. That's not something that my parents were able to understand. And I know that's something a lot of folks had barriers to realizing. There's understanding what the results of those, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans would, like, result in. And even just, like, if you do go to college, being able to have access to sustainable work study, or, like, being able to have the support, financial support, to be able to participate in college life, I guess, is sort of the way you can frame that as well. So there's just a lot of different barriers to just, like, accessing financial education that's sustainable and that doesn't lead to hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And I guess I'll just list off the other ones. Being able to access public transportation that isn't always, like, really late. I know for me, the bus can be, like, a half an hour late, and then I can't go to work on time. That was one of the testimonials that someone brought up as well, like having to drop out of school because he wasn't able to go to school on time or wasn't able to afford the fare as well. And one that really is, I guess, dear to me was just being able to access the work experience right after graduating from college. I realized that a lot of folks that I went to school with, I went to, like, a private school, the private liberal arts school, had the connections right after they graduated. So they were able to, like, do the sort of work that they wanted to do. But the only option that was really presented to me was doing AmeriCorps. So it wasn't the best option to, like, access work experience because it's only for certain pretty, like, middle-class folks who are able to do that with that as the only source of income.
Well, you've alluded to the barriers that people find in trying to find work. And maybe just as sort of a recap, you could list the top three again.
Number one barrier that young people identified was access to financial aid for higher education. I guess also including vocational schools and community colleges. And then also access to paid work experience, particularly one that they can live comfortably, and also access to reliable and affordable public transportation. in a way, all three of these barriers are linked together. You can't, you know, go to college if you can't afford it. You can't get there either if you can't afford to get on the bus or if there aren't any buses. And then once you're out of college, how can you get a job without experience, without the buses? And so in a way, even though these are three barriers, they're really linked to opportunity that people really wanted to see. And something that I heard a lot in the roundtables is like that was echoed by the young workers of color is that people aren't trying to get to college or to become rich or anything like that. A lot of them express wanting to take care of their families or bring something back to their community. And so there's a lot of like talent that is waiting to be used, but also people really wanting to give back. Oh, I also wanted to throw out that we did ask a question in the survey about how important was it to you about getting a job that was green or good for the environment. And majority of the folks put 4 or 5 as most important or very important. And so it goes to show that even though, you know, young people are struggling, they really do have care for the environment. They want to do good with the environment and not take jobs that would not make their communities healthy.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Jill Mangaliman, lead organizer,
and Yonyonjo Mukungu,
Young Workers in the Green Economy Steering Committee member for Got Green, a grassroots organizing group led by people of color and based in Southeast Seattle that works to ensure that the benefits of the green movement and green economy reach low-income communities of color. Our topic is the Young Workers in the Green Economy Project and their new report, Environmental Justice, Jobs and Education, Seattle's Young Adults Speak Out. Going back now to the barriers, let's talk about some of your suggested solutions to overcome the barriers. So why don't we start out with number one, the access to
financial aid and training.
One of the recommendations that came out was to look at the 13th year program. Some community colleges, like South Seattle Community College, offer their first year free for Seattle Public Schools graduates. And so seeing how do we, you know, create that as a program that's more readily available to people in the city is one.
How about getting access to vocational training? What would be some of the solutions to barriers there?
Part of it is that a lot of folks aren't able to participate in apprenticeships or training programs because of their criminal record or because that comes up as a barrier to financial aid as well. So dropping that restriction for people with criminal backgrounds was something that came up. We also talked about how do we also create more programs around strengthening programs and connecting people with financial aid as well. The other one was about allowing folks with work study or who are low-income students to be able to access food stamps as a way to complement their struggle. A lot of students are low-income, and so being able to have their food, you know, stipend, that would help with a basic need for students.
Okay, so for the second most important barrier, the lack of work experience and inability to find living wage jobs, what are some of your ideas there for how to overcome the barriers?
Well, we definitely support having a $15 hour minimum wage so that people who are trying to get that job experience are able to have like a sustainable income and an income that really allows them to be able to move forward. And I guess the second thing was having more access to jobs within the community, so like local jobs. And I think that's a lot of what Targeted Local Hire does mm-hmm. as well. And I guess within that, just having local jobs that are green jobs so that they're not only within certain communities, so we're able to access those jobs.
Okay, so then your third barrier, the transportation one, what are your thoughts here as far as solutions?
So it's just not cutting all of the stops, and also providing a low-income fare that is accessible to people who are not able to afford $90 a month to have like a unlimited bus pass. It's really expensive. As one of the people within the testimonial said, like, she shouldn't have to pay as much as an executive to have to ride the bus. Like, it's it's sort of ridiculous.
Another thing we were talking about, and there's already been kind of a buzz in the South End, is bringing the community college to the people, and that if there is a community college in Rainier Beach or in South End, then it would also, in a way, create some local economy stimulus, and also people would be able to get there easily and not have to travel great distances, especially with all these bus cuts. So bringing a community college or a technical school to Rainier Beach would be another option.
What kind of response have you gotten to your report so far?
Most folks have been really excited. Also, the responses have been intergenerational, because a lot of people have experienced these barriers at some point in their life or are experiencing them right now. And so it's actually brought a lot of people together and rich conversations about how do we move forward, how do we support our young people, how do we make the system better. At a report back, there were over 200 people, and they were just, really in-depth conversations about how do we move forward together and make this better. Because obviously, all three of these barriers are really relevant and really hindering our young people.
Also, just to add, I think what people were really enthusiastic about was just the fact that it's like a really youth-led movement, and it's really reflecting of all of our experiences. And part of that is just bringing in new ways of presenting information, or also just new ways of organizing. And I think people are really excited about that.
Where do you plan to focus your efforts over the next year or so?
Well, the more immediate issue right now is with all the Metro bus cuts. And of course, we've been asked to make comments and also stand up for our community. And so there has been a long list of cuts, and we're especially concerned because there are, you know, cuts all around the city, but major cuts to key buses in the central and the south Seattle area that connect people to their school and work, basically, and could really, disconnect people from where they need to go. And these are buses that are, you know, not only connectors to east, to west, to south, to north, but they're also buses that, you know, we're worried that are busy buses, or the ones that are going to get people downtown, and that a lot of folks in South Seattle or in the Central District or in these gaps will be disproportionately harmed by these cuts. And so we're definitely paying attention and seeing how we can get a comment out there and get folks aware of, you know, the cuts that are happening. But in the next coming months, the Young Workers Committee, I know they're going to be getting together, taking back the feedback, having more discussions about their next strategy or where they're going to go from here.
Where does Scott Green get its funding?
For this particular project, we received a Department of Neighborhoods grant, and also a grant from the Leadership Council. And it was more directed towards, getting stories or doing the survey and the report. We have a very diverse funding stream. We do our Greenathon, which is our grassroots fundraiser. And also we apply to different grants, but we're definitely trying to keep our funding diverse.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
At least for me, I think the message that I would like to leave is young people of color are working hard to get the jobs that they need to support their community. And there shouldn't be so many barriers to being able to support your community. And yeah, that's what I would believe.
The important thing to think about is that, and Anjo brought this up, is that we all kind of feel isolated sometimes, and these are our own problems. And through connecting with other people, whether it's through a survey, a conversation, or, you know, an action, that these are barriers and issues that a lot of us are experiencing, that I experienced when I was a young person, and actually I'm still a young person. But when people get together and collectivize their strength, can do amazing things. And this year for Got Green especially, I've seen a lot of leadership come out of the community and a lot of pushing conversations. And so I feel that when community gets together, really powerful.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
You are just listening to Jiwa Mongaleman, lead organizer, and Anyanjo Mukungu, Young Workers in the Green Economy Steering Committee member for Got Green. For more information, check on the web at gotgreenseattle.org. Again, that's gotgreenseattle.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.